today we will try to complete the second verse of the Srimad Bhagavat at the Sri Shokishit. So, quick summary of what we discussed in the first verse. We discussed firstly about the nature of scriptural translation, and not just text, but context and culture. Then we discussed how the glory of the Vedic literature and Vedic philosophy is obscured from society because of many centuries of misinterpretation and attack. And Srila Prabhupada is slowly pioneering a countering of that. And then we discussed about the concept of proprietorship of God, which is not understood at all in the modern society. And after that we discussed about how the Acharya gives eternal principles through contextual examples, communism and capitalism. And we concluded with the quota of humans with respect to nature is to take vegetarian food primarily, to acknowledge God. So now the link between the first and second verse is, so Krishna has to, the Ishvara tells us the principle according to which we should live. The second verse will describe what is the effect of living according to this principle. And the third verse will describe what is the effect of violating this principle. So, let us recite the second verse. Do you have it?
कुर्वन्नेवेह कर्माणि जीविशेषकं समाम् एवं त्वयिनान्यते धोति कर्मणिते नरे.
Translation.
One may aspire to live for hundreds of years. He continuously goes on working in that way. If one may aspire to live for hundreds of years, he continuously goes on working in that way. For that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. Yes.
So this is a very interesting and rhetorical way of putting things. In general, everybody aspires to live for thousands of years. Nobody wants to die. But materialistic people, the longer they live, the more bad karma they are doing and the more they are bringing suffering on their lives. So therefore, a long life is useful if it is doing good to us and it is doing good to others. Otherwise, all of us know the story of Jivova Marova. In that, also the many other butcher, for him his life now is suffering and one is going to die, also that will be suffering. So the scriptures say value the quality of life more than the quantity. And they're saying when the quality is there, then the quantity is also of some use. So the quality of each following Ishavasya principle is there, then one can live for thousands of years. Kurvan eveha, so this eva refers to what came in the previous verse. Karma, iha karmani, iha is in this world. In this world, when one does work in this way, Tiji Vishesh, live Chatam Samaha, one can desire Chatam, hundreds of years. Chatam is a transformed form of the verb of Chatam. Chatam Samaha. Evam, as compared to this, Tvai na Anyatha. Anyatha means otherwise or alternative. Na Anyathe Thosti. There is no other way. Na Karma Lipyate na Ve. For the human body, there is no other way. Lipyate means that to bind, namam karmani limpanti, in the Bhagavad Gita world, so then lipyate. So this sort of work will not bind the man, otherwise there is no alternative. Now, there is no alternative is a rhetorical statement. There is an alternative, but an alternative leads to disaster. See, if there is only one staircase for climbing down from a 50-story building, and there is no other alternative, no alternative way of going down. If there is an alternative way, they just jump down. But that will lead to disaster. So the scriptures are saying that there is no alternative. If you don't live this way, then suffering. So that's why the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describes how all living entities are bound by the Vedas as a bull is bound by the rope going through its nose. That means the elements are regulated by the Veda. Now you see most people today are not following the Veda. And how are they bound? Well, they are bound by the consequences of not following the Veda. So the freedom is there to not follow, but whenever there is freedom, there is freedom to choose, but there is no freedom to... We have freedom to choose the action, but we don't have freedom to choose the consequence of the action. The consequence is inbuilt in the action. The effects are inbuilt in the causes. And therefore, because we can't change the consequences, so what the scripture advises us to change the choices that we make. Then the consequences will change. So, in this purport, the theme is long life. So, first Prabhupada, I'll just do only of the purport and then we will go into the detail. First, the Prabhupada explains how everybody will die because that is the law of material nature, and that is the way karma binds us. It takes away from us our facilities for living, and ultimately the body, which is the basic facility. So, all of us are bound to death by cycle of birth and death by karma. Then, all creatures are bound like this, but human form offers the opportunity to break free from this bondage. Then Srila Prabhupada talk about karma, the karma and akarma. And akarma is the way to break free from this bondage. And the Vedas ultimately teach akarma. Although they principally teach karma. Principally means the main five in terms of five, the Vedas are teaching karma kanda. But ultimately they lead us to akarma. Akarma is non-primitive action. Oh, really? Sorry. Just a minute. So make a mistake like that is karma.
Yeah. This part of the question of the Veda talks about the akarma or going to back to the source. Population is better. Like Krishna is minister, Aham is minister. Not for Radha Rushiha,
but... I have a question in mind, it's completely needed. See, this is, I will discuss it in the purport of Veda Vada Rathaha Paratha, that section is there. Verse 9. Verse 9 purport will discuss that. So, the Vedas ultimately teaches the karma, but we cannot go to akarma immediately. Akarma, so therefore what? How we start? We start by adding God in our life. That means starting some level of karma yoga. First there is karma kanda and there is karma yoga. All of you have studied the yoga level, haven't you? So I won't go into that. So begin by adding God in the creator life. This is what? This is karma kanda. So the Vedas start by teaching us karma kanda. But then after that, they can actually, without God, everything is in vain. Well, it's a big zero. And then the highest level is, okay, when you don't say at karma kanda, why is to karma yoga? Karma yoga will ultimately lead to akarma. So, in this way, if we come to the level of akarma, then we can desire to live for thousands of years. Na karma lipyate nare. Yes, sir?
In karma kanda, we add God as we are giving up. We don't have God right there.
The principle is, the question is whether we add God or demigods in karma kanda. The principle is there we are adding a higher authority. And that higher authority represents the Supreme Lord. In all the yajnas also, Vishnu Mantra is always there. So, you know, Shankaracharya, this Papasmat Brahmana, he started the Panchopasana. And although many of the Panchopasana followers consider the five devatas to be equivalent. But now, if we see Shankaracharya himself, he was a Vaishnava. He worshipped Vishnu as his Aradhya Dev. Although he also wrote songs glorifying other devatas, but his personal primary deity was Vishnu. So, Vishnu's position is special, is acknowledged by most schools of thought. So, that's how it is that even by accepting the devatas, we are accepting the authority of the Supreme Lord. Maya eva hitan hitan. What that was? Yepyanya devata bhakta yajante shaddayamita tepi mahameva kaunteya yajante avidhipurvakam. That those who are worshipping other devatas are also worshipping me, although they are doing it in an improper way. Now, here there is some contemporary experience, I tell. You know, one devotee was discussing with one Hindu and he sent me an email. So this was from a popular Hinduism website, and that they had quoted the Bhagavad Gita, and this was the verse which they were quoting. And the whole verse was proper, except that Avidhi Kauruka was removed. Those who worship the demigod are also worshipping. Essential point is, certainly worshipping me. But how are they worshipping me? Avidhi Purvaka. The whole point of the verse is what? It's Avidhi Purvaka. But that was kept out. And I was quite incensed when I wrote to the editor of the website. And then I told him, that Sanskrit is so obvious. So he was an intelligent person, but he had his own very interesting and instructive reasoning. He said, you know, the scriptures are something which are a lived reality. So we would like to present the scriptures as people understand it today. So we considered 25 current translations of popular Bhagavad Gita, and 14 of them did not include Avidhi Purvaka. So therefore, we are presenting the verse as it is understood by Hindu students. So then I asked him, how is the wisdom eternal? If people are understanding machine all the time, how is the wisdom eternal? He said that actually we had a long discussion. He was a gentleman, but I appreciate his point of reasoning, and then I explained what we as devotees need to do. Then I told him, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, you know, it is the most widely read Gita in the world. He said, that is fine. That is also one of the sources we consider. But that's only one of the sources. Now what happens, in many other organizations, they have many successors, and each of them writes a commentary on the Gita. And then, so from one particular organization, there will be four commentaries on the Gita, and they become, they have four voices in that particular forum. So that's why, you know, within this conscious Prabhupada at one time said that, which are the books you would like to translate? Prabhupada, I would like to translate Gita also. He already translated Gita. He said, there are so many Acharya's commentaries. You can translate the whole thing again. So, now many Prabhupada disciples have written books on the Gita again. Very beautifully, he's calling it. The Bhagavad Gita is called the Beloved Lord's Secret Love Song. So Bhagavad Gita is translated as the Beloved Lord. And Gita is Secret Love Song. That's a very nice poetic translation of the Gita. And even Kala Kandapur version, the Song Divine, that's also a poetic translation. So many devotees are doing like that. So the point is that, you know, we have to have our presence in the intellectual world, in all generations. Srila Prabhupada is undoubtedly the founder Acharya. But, you know, the intellectual world is a living world. And when we have our representatives in that world, the living representatives, then we can make an impact. And only those organizations survive and flourish in which generation after generation, there are preachers, leaders, writers, intellectuals, only they survive. So, Yajanti Avidhi Purvakam, and Avidhi Purvakam just removed from there. That's why we as devotees have a big responsibility of these persons. Their logic is understandable from their point of view. But it is not, it is completely wrong from the point of view of scripture. We can't remove or play around with verses like that. There's another, I was hearing one, the Sulika recitation of one, some Smarti Brahman. So what they had done, Sarva Dharman Paritya Mamekam Sharanam Raj. This was the verse. So they have made it Sarva Adharman Paritya Mamekam Sharanam Raj. Because we can't digest how you can view dharma. So they have changed the scripture itself to suit their understanding. But this is even one step worse. You know, one is to skip, change the translation, other is to change the scripture itself. To make Sarva Adharman Paritya into Sarva Adharman Paritya. So, scripture has to be presented by its living representative generation after generation. And that's why the Vedic philosophy is entirely non-Vedic. The Vedic philosophy is, the Vedic philosophy, Vedic culture, Vedic philosophy is, there is a living tradition of Acharyas. Vedic philosophy is never exclusivistic. Exclusivism is the characteristic of the Semitic religions. Christianity, I am the way, the Godfather and the light and the way, and none shall go to the Father except through me. Mohammed, I am the last and the best prophet. There is no prophet after me. This is not Vedic culture. Not at all. You know, yes, Prabhupada is the prominent founder Acharya, but Yeah, we cannot say that Rupa is the only acharya. There will be acharyas before him, there will be acharyas after him. And so, to the extent parampara stays alive by producing wonderful devotees in each generation, to the extent of all its spreads. So, the point I was making is, I was answering your question about demigod worship. Yes, Prabhu?
Those pastors were not elaborated by Krishna as Kavaj. So, whatever Kriyata Kavaj is there, the point which you are making, how we follow the right principle in this, the future generations are writing commentaries, like again a Bhagavatam or again.
No, okay, the question is what the future generations are done, we don't do. Well, we have to see the time place that comes. Prabhupada did not write a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, on the Brahma Samhita, because it's spiritual master. But then, as the years passed, Prabhupada realized that Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's Brahma Samhita is practically inaccessible for most people, because the language is so difficult and complicated. So he told Tamalakrishna Maharaj to write a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. So Tamalakrishna Maharaj already wrote. He took Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's commentary, Jiva Goswami's commentary, and Prabhupada's purports, and he then take it in. We see in our Sampradaya only, Bhishma Sri Guru Thakur and Baldev Vidya Bhushan, they are Guru disciples. Both of them commented on that. And Baldev Vidya Bhushan's Gita practically never refers to Bhishma Chakravarti only. And the reason for that is very distinct. What is the reason? I started by explaining how there is prasthana trayi, you know, Shruti, Smriti and Nyaya. And any parampara which is any sampradaya which has to gain respectability in Vedantic circles has to comment on these three books. So in our sampradaya, nobody has commented on that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta, that was not required. But when the integrity of our parampara was challenged by the Ramanujas in Jaipur, at that time Baldev Vidya Bhushan wrote Govinda Bhash. And he stopped there. Well, he went ahead and he did. He wrote commentary on the prasthantra. You know, he wrote commentary on the 10 principles of Nishas also, or the commentaries are lost, only recently they have been discovered here in Bengal only. It's an old Gaudiya Vaishnava's house, fantastic manuscripts were there, they found it in Baldev Vidya Bhushan, only manuscript in the whole world.
Can you imagine? So like that, the phenomenal things are there, treasures.
And then he also wrote on Bhagavad Gita. So Baldev Vidya Bhushan's commentary on the Gita is mostly on Tattva point. Whereas Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary is on the Rasa point. So because both of them have different purposes, so therefore, there is not much overlap also. You know, rarely will they get to refer, because the Chakravarti part is writing primarily for relishing Gita to devotees. And Balde Vidyabhushan is writing to establish our sampradaya to those who are not exactly Gaudiya Vaishnava devotees. It's a different purpose. So if the time, place, circumstances change, surely things will change. If you see the last days of Srila Prabhupada, PKG's diary and the last day's conversations, Prabhupada was training Prajnana Prabhu and others, explaining how I write my purpose and how to complete that purpose. And we will be completed 11th and 12th canto.
So I think Gurbhavan Maharaj is
on?
Gurbhavan.
On what? Gurbhavan. Isn't
it? I heard something like
that. I have not seen that.
Shivam Maharaj.
Shivam Maharaj is a reference of Prabhupada's view. Translated, it's called Bhakti Vedanta
purpose.
Is it by Gaurav Maharaj?
Which means Brashke Bhava.
Is it by Gaurav Maharaj?
Actually,
it's true. That's the Brashke Bhava. Yeah, that is actually, that is one Prabhupada disciple, who is Gaudiya Matta, Tripurari Maharaj. Very wonderful Vaishnava. He has written a commentary on Gita, which includes the Vrajarasa in the Gita. So maybe Gaurav and I also have done that. I have not seen that. Anyway, the point is that according to time, place, circumstance, what is required? So it's unlikely that a respond devotee will write a verse by verse commentary on the Gita. That's not required. But according to time, place, circumstance, certain ways of presenting the Gita may be required. That is perfectly okay. So the point is, the parampara never freezes. The parampara continues to live always. And for parampara to live, every generation has to have gurus, has to have leaders, has to have writers, has to have speakers, has to have singers. you know, if you decide that Prabhupada is the last writer, then why not Prabhupada is the last pujari? Why not Prabhupada is the last singer? You know, nobody has to do singing kirtans. Prabhupada can only sing, can it, all of us, Prabhupada doesn't feel other than us. So, morning, there's no need for you to sing Mangala. Please have Prabhupada sing Mangala. There's no need for any of us to give class. Every morning, Peter says to Prabhupada's class. But why don't we stop that? So, it's completely anti-Vedic philosophy. The principle is surely in every sampradaya, like even now in the Ramanuja sampradaya, people should do that. But in their understanding, the position of Ramanuja is distinct. You know, but they don't, that doesn't mean that the current acharyas don't teach or don't write. See, the Christians, they write so many books on the Bible. They will write Bible and science, Bible and philosophy, Bible and ecology, Bible and fuel crisis, everything they do. Bible and economics, Bible and homosexuality also. All sorts of things are there. But what happens by these? Do their Bible sales decrease? No. Every year, as more books are done in the Bible, their Bible distribution increases. Why? Because these books which they are writing, they are read by people who normally never read the Bible. And after reading this book, then they realize that, okay, there is some relevant religion in the Bible also. And then come to the Bible. That way, our goal is never to replace the substitute Prabhupada's books. But our goal is to spread the reach of Prabhupada's books. And in the West, as times are changing, it is very increasingly difficult to distribute Prabhupada's books because Prabhupada's language is almost 70, 80 years ago. And most people don't understand it. Many times, you know, we hear only one side of the book distribution, that you would go and distribute hundreds of books. But most temples, they would also have devotees, at the end of every day of book distribution, they would go to all the dustbins and pick up books from there. So many people would just take the book, and they would find it, and they can just throw them in the bus. So, there are countries, for example, like Sweden, the population of 8 million, they distribute 3 million books over there. 3 million. That means almost every second person has got a book. There are only 30 devotees in the country. Of course, there were at one time a lot of devotees. So my point is not to minimize book distribution. And the other day also I said that when we emphasize something, we make it as the only thing to do. And when we minimize something, we say it is valuable. It is not like that. So there has to be a balance. Srila Prabhupada emphasized book distribution, and book distribution will go on generation after generation. Our whole Tirupati temple is built by book distribution. Almost all of it. So book distribution is a glorious activity. But it cannot substitute for that. The Sanish cannot substitute for deity worship. It cannot substitute for individual sadhana. Similarly, it cannot substitute for community building. It cannot substitute for dealing with contemporary issues. It cannot substitute for writing in the current generations. And nor should these activities replace book distribution. So they are actually having their own spheres of influence. There are many examples of the disciple commenting on the same book as the spiritual master has commented on. Jiva Goswami comments on many books which Rupa Goswami has also commented on. It's not wrong to do that. The spirit is very important. The spirit is extremely important.
They come in which
Karma Yoga
or
Karma Kanda? Okay, the four kinds of people surrender to Krishna, do they come in Karma Kanda or Karma Yoga? Actually, they are potential bhaktas because they have come to Krishna. So they are neither Karma Kanda, they are not Karma Yogis. They are potential bhaktas. So now their consciousness may be Karma Kanda or their consciousness may be Karma Yogi. Most likely, see, all of us, we are the bhakti path, although our consciousness may not be as a bhakta right. Like I say, my consciousness is at the level of the karma, vikarmi. But we have come to the path of bhakti. So, what is the defining characteristic of bhakti yoga? Is that we identify Krishna as the supreme goal. If we identify that, then we are considered a bhakta. That's Prabhupada's broad definition of bhakti. But in karma yoga, eternal objective identified. But the external objective may not be Bhagavan. It may be Brahman, it may be Paramatma. So, once the eternal objective is identified, it becomes yoga. In Karma Kanda, it's only a temporary material object. It's only a material object. Either gain in this life or gain in the next life. So, when it's a material objective, it's Karma Kanda. when it's an eternal objective but not Bhagavan, it is yoga, some kind of yoga. And as soon as Bhagavan is identified as the goal, then it becomes bhakti. Yes.
One of the objectives is to that by reading Prabhupada books, I understand the meaning of Acharya.
Very important, yes.
But the thing is, like, when there are so many books available, like so many devotees will write books, now to be seen, like, now we go in the Wesley Gift of, like, Spawn Center, Gift of. So now so many books have come up. So, like, Prabhupada's books are being kept in the corner now.
Going in corner and corner, and just the generation has passed. But after a few generations pass away, you want these things to become obscure and we keep on writing.
Yeah,
see, it's a very valid question. Will Prabhupada's books be sidelined by the books of subsequent authors? Very important question. And the way to answer it is, and way to deal with this concern is not by discouraging potential authors, but by training potential devotees. Understand the difference? We should train devotees on the importance of Prabhupada books. Not that we stop devotees from writing books. Because those were just like we have Prabhupada's Hare Krishna, which is very, very intensely devotional. And that's very nice. But if we say somebody is a good singer, you know, you should sing only Prabhupada's Hare Krishna, you should not sing any other books. Will that work? No. If somebody has the musical talent, he has to express it. But then, if devotees start hearing only musically deteriorating kirtans and they don't appreciate devotionally intensely, when Bhakti Saraswati Thakur was departing, you know, he asked one devotee to lead, the one devotee was a very sweet singer, was really kirtan at that time. Then stopped and told another devotee who was very Siddharmaraj, told him the same. So he appreciated that devotion. So, yes, we have to focus on the devotional essence, but the way to focus on devotional essence is not by discouraging talent, but by encouraging intelligent discrimination of devotees. We cannot discourage talent, then the talent will go away. ISKCON has lost many devotees like this, because intellectuals found no place in ISKCON. So if one is an intellectual in ISKCON, they have gone to Gaudiya Math, or they have gone to the academic world, or they just left ISKCON. So the point is, it's a very valid concern, but the way to deal with it is by training devotees in intelligent discrimination.
Like, writing is a good thing, but when it comes to distribution?
Never. Raghavan Maharaj, he is not engaged any, he is a no brahmachari, should go and distribute journey over the streets. Street distribution is only thing for Prabhupada's books. There can be one department, in Chopra level they have one department, which takes care of Maharaj's website and Maharaj's book, and there are one or two Brahmacharis involved in it. So street distribution is not any of the books, generally speaking. Unless it's a specific audience. If you have a scientific conference, you need scientific books at that time. Then we can have, if you are going to youth audiences, we may distribute specific books. Say like in the youth hostels, we may distribute Raja Shantu's books. For specific audiences, specifically oriented books are okay. You know, when I wrote that book on recession, Gopal Krishna Maharaj gave it to the Prime Minister of India, the President of India, the Prime Minister of Mauritius, the President of Mauritius. Because there is nothing relevant time with that. So, you know, a specific context, specific situations, you can do the books for, at that time. But, so that is okay. But the mainstream distribution, that will not change. That should not change. That is okay, because many times the people who come and get shops are not serious devotees. And Prabhupada's books are intensely devotional. So if we keep only Prabhupada's books, people may not take any book. So the idea is that yena pratina prakarena mana Krishna niveshi. That is the beginning. Somehow or another connected Krishna. But if person reads some book, by which he becomes connected to Krishna consciousness. And then what happens? Then we can read Prabhupada's books. See, it's going to happen in the bookstall, because the bookstall, it's to some extent a commercial way. You know, if you have a Govindas, you know, all the daily items of food which are there, you won't put them on the highlight. Today's special item. If you have written, that's what you are going to put. So that is it's a devotional project, but it's a commercial project also. So that's going to happen. And if we try to avoid that, of course these are management issues and there are no, what I am saying is not just my stand, it's the stand of many devotees. But this is not the only opinion within this content. See, as the generations pass on, what we understand is that there is no one correct way. Anybody who says that this is the correct way that Prabhupada wanted things to. Actually, there is not one point or one line. It's a circumference, it's a circle of ways of which is compatible with Prabhupada's approach. So, no, this content can say that the way I am doing is the only way Prabhupada did, and that's the only way, only for in this way it is the bona fide way. That would be very narrow minded. Because Prabhupada himself used different strategies at different times. So rather than saying that this is the only way, rather we have to see if a particular way that is being used is compatible with what Prabhupada is doing. It is a circle. And if you are within that circle, then it's good. Now somebody may on the left side of the circle, somebody may on the right side, and then we have a huge difference between them. But both of them are doing Prabhupada's will, and they are doing it in accordance with certain instruction of Prabhupada. So we have to understand, without this visibility, there will be no room for any challenge. You know that famous pastime, huh? When the devotees were doing distribution, some devotees became genius at book distribution. And Prabhupada was so pleased with them. So at that time, Prabhupada, they went to Prabhupada and they said, Prabhupada, we have learned certain lines. You know, certain statements we make, certain way we make our hand gestures, certain way we talk and approach. You know, we persuade people and make people take books. So can we go and teach these techniques in temple to temple to temple? And then we can increase the distribution enormously. So Prabhupada became very pleased. And Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is individual, voluntary and spontaneous. When the soul wants to serve Krishna, then service gets rendered. So he says, don't go around teaching techniques. Go around inspiring people to distribute books. And they will distribute books according to their way. Krishna consciousness is individual, voluntary and spontaneous. Spontaneous doesn't mean rakanuga bhakti. Spontaneous means the soul feels inspired to serve. So, in the name of conformity to the parampara, we cannot stamp out individuality. In fact, one of the things which inspires new devotees is the wide variety within the senior devotees in our own. You know, you see every sannyasi, every maharaj, every guru has his own individuality. It's his own individual personal nature, and that's how different people get accommodated, attracted and accommodated. So conformity with parampara doesn't mean stamping out individuality. It means expressing our individuality in a way that is compatible with the instructions of the acharyas. So that's how bhakti is dynamic. It's not monotonous. You see?
So, let's start with the purport.
Yeah. Where is the mic? Quickly.
No one wants to die. Everyone wants to live as long as he can drag him. This tendency is really good. Not only individually, but also collectively in the community, society and nation. There is a hard struggle for life by all kinds of living entities. And the Vedas say that this is quite natural. The living being is eternal by nature, but due to his bondage in material existence, he has to change his body over and over. This process is called transmigration of the soul or karma bandhan. Bondage by one's birth.
Now you see Prabhupada's translation again here. Now no dictionary will say transmigration is equal to karma bandhan. Is it? Transmigration of the soul or karma bandhan. So when they say Prabhupada saying these two are equal, that is not a technical sense. It is a causative sense. So karma, what is translation, transmigration caused by? It is caused by our bondage to work. We do certain work. So there is a contemporary phrasing of the law of karma that I read. You know, whatever you cook, you have to eat.
So, whatever you cook, you have to eat.
Whatever activities we do, we will have to bear the consequences of them. And how do we bear? Some of them in this life, some of them in the future life. So, the transmigration of the soul happens because we become bound through our actions to their consequences. So, actually, you see, sometimes when the cycle scan, a cycle falls. One cycle falls, a chain effect starts, chain reaction, many cycles fall. So, like that, when we do a karma, then there is a chain reaction that is set off. And out of that, only one reaction is visible to us. For example, somebody does some sinful activity. You know, the only reaction that is visible is, did that person get caught or did that person not get caught? But that has set off a chain reaction. What is the chain reaction? That actually, by the law of karma, certain reaction is going to come back. But along with that, it is also set into motion the psychological tendencies. The person keeps being impelled by those desires again and again. So when we talk about karma bandhana, it is not very abstract, although it may seem abstract. It is something very practical. How are we bound? We are bound by our own desires. Whenever we do any activity which gives us some pleasure, even if it is temporary and illusory, that pleasure, the memory of that pleasure binds us. So karma bandhana is the bandhana to is the bondage caused by our own desires to do karma. Srila Prabhupada often says, if you are free from such desire, then you are as good as liberated. What causes our bondage in this world is our desire to enjoy this body and the objects in this world.
Go ahead.
A living entity has to work for its livelihood because that is the law of material nature. And if it does not act according to his prescribed duties, he transgresses the law of nature and binds himself more and more to the cycle of birth and death in the many species of life. Other life forms are also subject to the cycle of birth and death, but when the living entity attains a human life, he gets a chance to get free from the chains of karma. Karma, akarma and vikarma
is fine. I'm discussing this. See. So, the animals, they are just helplessly going to grow old, get diseased and die, and again take birth. In the human form, one can attain liberation by performing a karma. It's a potential that is there. That potential has to be converted into actual activity, into confrontation energy, has to be made into kinetic energy. And that is done by the Vedic system. Go ahead.
Karma, akarma and vikarma are very clearly described in the Bhagavad Gita. Actions that are performed in terms of one's prescribed duties, as mentioned in the revealed scriptures, are called karma. Actions that free one from the cycle of birth and death are called akarma. And actions that are performed through the misuse of one's freedom and that direct one to the lower life forms are called vikarma. Of these three types of actions, that which frees one from the bondage to karma is preferred by intelligent men.
Yes. This is section of the Bhagavad Gita Prabhupada is talking about 4th chapter, 4.15 to 18. There is also about Gahana, 4.16, 17, 18. He is talking about Gahana Karmanam. Kim karma kim karmeti kavayopya pramohita tattei karma pravakshami vidyatva mukshase shihat. That this karma and vikarma, even the wise people are bewildered about it. I will explain it to you now. By which one will become free from bondage. And then he explains, karmano yapi bodhavyam bodhavyam chari karmana akarmanasya bodhavyam gahana karmano. That's 4.17. You should know these things. Karma, vikarma, akarma. And gati, the progress of karma is gahan. Very difficult to understand. And to give a glimpse of how it is difficult to understand, Krishna himself speaks in a very difficult way. He says, karmanya akarma ya pakshe akarmani cha karmaya sa buddhiman manushyeshu sa yukta pusna karma krut. One who sees action in inaction and inaction in action is wise among men.
Sir, I was the way you speak there, it's difficult to pronounce also.
Action in inaction, inaction in action.
And it's all the more difficult to understand.
Karmanya akarma ya pakshe. One who sees action in inaction. So he's telling Arjuna that you think that if you renounce the world and sit down and meditate, you'll be doing inaction and you'll become free from bondage. He says, no, there is action in inaction. Just like in law, there is a crime, there is a form of crime called crime by negligence. That means if the police, if the some thieves are rioting somewhere, And the police don't go and do anything over there. They have not done anything, but by inaction they have done action. If a patient is dying, and the doctor can treat the patient, but the doctor doesn't treat. By inaction, he is culpable. So Arjuna, you are a Kshatriya, you are meant to protect innocent people. If you don't act, by your inaction, you are doing action. So, karmanya akarma ya pashye. So in akarma, one who sees karma. One in inaction, one is seeing action. And akarmani cha karmaya. One who sees inaction in action. That means, yes, you are going to fight the war, but you are not motivated by selfish desires. You are motivated by the desire of serving the Lord. Then that is inaction. So, the Prabhupada here will explain how the Vedas first talk about karmakanda. And then ultimately they make us. So karmakanda is equivalent to karma over here. And beyond that is akarma. Go ahead.
Ordinary men wish to perform good work in order to be recognized, achieve some higher status of life in this world or in heaven. But more advanced men want to be free altogether from the actions and reactions of work. Intelligent men well know that both good and bad work equally point one to the material misery. Consequently, they seek that work which will free them from the reactions of both good and bad work. Such liberating work is described here in the pages of Sri Ishopanishad.
Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Durenya avaram karma buddhi yoga dhanjaya buddhau sharanavanyaccha krupanah palahetavaha. Durenya avaram karma. This is the verse which causes the confusion. This is 2.49, which causes the confusion in Arjuna's mind. This leads to question in 3.192. Keep away abominable work, Arjuna. By buddhi yoga. By intelligence, understand what is good work, what is bad work. And by taking shelter of intelligence, do your work. Buddhau sharanavanyaccha krupanah palahetavaha. So Arjuna, Krishna is calling karma kanda as avaram karma. Inauspicious work. Karma kanda. But Arjuna is thinking, what is avaram karma? Fighting with the war. Therefore, I should not fight. I should become intelligent. I should become a kyani. So, yes, one who follows God, even for karma kanda level, is intelligent. But as Prabhupada would say, if you go to the church and pray, oh Father, hallowed be thy name, give us our daily bread. That shows our love for bread, not love for God. So, it's good that we are going to God, but that is not a selfless spiritual level.
That is still a material level. So, this is the point we should discuss was,
the Vedas ultimately lead to vikarma, sorry, akarma.
Now, but how does it begin? Yeah, go ahead.
The instructions of Sri Shopanishad are more elaborately explained in the Bhagavad Gita.
So I was correlating what Prabhupada said with Gita, Prabhupada is bringing the same point here.
Sometimes, for the Gita Upanishad, the cream of all Upanishad, in the Bhagavad Gita 3.9-16, the personality of God says that one cannot attain the state of Nash Karma or Akarma without executing the prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedic literature. This literature can regulate the working energy of a human being in such a way that he can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. When he realizes the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva or Krishna, it is to be understood that he has attained the stage of positive knowledge. In this purified stage, the modes of nature, namely goodness, passion and ignorance, cannot act, and he is able to work on the basis of Nash Karma. Such work does not bind one to the cycle of birth and death. Actually,
yeah.
No one has to do
so long. So, in general, we read one paragraph and discuss a little bit on that. Prabhupada has a very interesting phrase over here. This literature can regulate the working energy of a human being in such a way that he can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. What does this mean? Because if somebody is a singer, his working energy is used for singing. He likes to sing. But then you tell him, sing about the Supreme Lord. And as he starts singing about the Supreme Lord, he starts realizing that actually all singing gives me happiness because I like it. But this singing about the Lord is something special. It gives some special happiness, some different happiness. And then he starts thinking, okay, that means actually my happiness is coming not from singing, but from the Lord. because it was coming only from singing, then all the time I should be getting that happiness. Then if the Lord can give me this happiness, then it will not only be singing. I can cook for Him, I can preach for Him, I can do other services, I'll get the same happiness because I'm connected with Him. And gradually that person, so when he wants to sing, he's a singer and he just wants to sing. He doesn't care what he's singing. But he's ready to sing for the Lord also. And what is happening? His working energy is getting regulated. But by that he realizes the fault is of God. Actually I am meant to be His servant. And what is giving me happiness is not just the singing, it is service to Him. And that service I can do in different things. And then gradually that person becomes realized. So, you know, this material world is a place of problems for everyone. Whether a person is a king or a person is a pauper, everybody has to face problems in this world. But the expertise of Varnashram is to arrange society in such a way that everybody faces the kind of problems that they like to face. See, everybody has to face problems, but a person is a superior nature. So he would like to delegate, control, manage. You know, so you give in that sort of situation. I like to do that. Somebody with a Brahminical nature, you know, you manage this person. Or you get burdened up. Somebody with a Kshatriya nature, you sit and tell him, you know, find out this verse in the Upanishad. This is Muslim to read all the Upanishads, find that verse. So I tell Brahmin, yeah, this is what I like to do. So, the expertise of Varnashram is, that everybody is given, now if somebody is a Vaishya nature, and you tell him, okay, come on, let's memorize all the 700 verses of the Gita. He say, you know, I'll collect 7 crore rupees for you, but don't make him I can't do that. So, unfortunately, in modern society, because of over-glamorization of certain professions, you know, many times people get into professions which are not according to their nature. And although they will in a sense be talented, but they will not be talented in that particular field. And because of the unidimensional definition of success in our society, unidimensional definition of success means that only if you become IIT, you become an engineer or you become a doctor or whatever, then you are successful. Then because of this unidimensional definition of success, many people feel, if I don't achieve this, I am a failure. But they could be very good in other things. But they are talented. So the expertise of Varnashram is to engage people according to their natures. To give them problems which they will like to face. Ultimately they will say that nobody likes to face problems. That is true, but everybody likes to have some challenges. So it's just a difference of name. Is there a problem or is there a challenge? You can say it's just a matter of attitude. But no, it's not just a matter of attitude. You know, for a Brahmana to have to raise funds is not just a challenge, it's a problem. For a Brahmana to search, to study scripture is not a problem, it's a challenge. So we can't just change the nature of a situation by changing the word that we give to it or changing the mentality, changing the mindset. Because all of us have certain psychophysical natures. So the scripture is very expert in this. Like arranging society for a spiritual purpose. So Prabhupada explains, we will discuss about Varnashram later in more detail. But here suffice it. Prabhupada explains in Varnashram, Varna is for the body, Ashram is for the soul. Varna is for the body. Now, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, there are different ways in which people can earn their livings. And Ashram is for the soul. All the religions talk about making, developing love for God and making spiritual advancement. But it is only the Vedic culture that offers a structure and a pathway for spiritual advancement. So beautifully start your life as a Brahmachari. Exclusive focus on the ultimate goal of life. And then you can enter Grahastha Ashram. Then also there is recognition, then you can have Vanaprastha. And again exclusive focus towards the end of life on sannyas. So because there is a structure for spiritual advancement, they can plan their lives. But not everybody can be a Brahmachari. But that doesn't mean that that person is lost. That person also can make spiritual advancement in a way that is compatible for them. So those who can become Brahmachari, that's wonderful, but those who can't, it's not that they have failed. They are only succeed in another. You know, one of the reasons why our movement faced a lot of problems after Prabhupada's departure was, during Prabhupada's time there was excessive emphasis on renunciation. renunciation was equated with spiritual advancement. Renunciation is a sign of spiritual advancement, but it is not the only sign. And if somebody is not renounced, then, you know, it can become a bit, then it was seen as this person very attached and this and that. So it was very unfortunate. And what happened was, that over a period of time, it's a very gross way, if a child is born in a family, it's a very gross and wrong thing to say that the child is a product of lust. A family man, a grahastha shakti, the child is a gift of God. Because Krishna says, dharma virundha bhukteshu, kama suvadashi. But there are both ways of looking at it. But which is the way that is most conducive for spiritual advancement? The parents see the child as a product of lust. Can they offer any love to the child? And if they have entered a particular ashram, they have to live according to the model of the ashram. So therefore, it said in the 11th canto, Uddhava Gita, it described that what is faulty and what is good varies according to time, place and conditions. So for a householder, certain things are duties. And for the non-householder, they are forbidden. But there, if the householder thinks that what I am doing is forbidden, and then that will lead to very incompatible situation. So the values are different according to different ashrams, and they have to be intelligently recognized. Now for a householder, if he can maintain his family and keep his family in Krishna consciousness, that is also a great success. And if one doesn't do that, then that can be a great challenge. It is very unfortunate that, you know, to some extent, at least in the Western society, Srila Prabhupada has strongly condemned divorce. There are so many divorces. So when Radha and Mala started the community, you know, the first thing he told was that, you know, all the, when a person becomes a devotee and gets married, so the home should be a happy home. So the husband and wife should spend sufficient time together, develop a spiritual relationship, go on pilgrimages. And that way, now why are we talking all this to Brahmachari? Because, you know, many of your equals are going to become grahasthas. And you should not make them feel inferior in you. You should appreciate them, encourage them, to value what they are doing. And that way, they play a very, very important role in society. What is the role that they play? You know, most people are not going to become brahmacharis.
Although in boys, they still many boys become brahmacharis.
But that's not going to happen generation after generation after generation. And those who become grahasthas are going to be the models for the larger world. And if the grahasthas go into marriage thinking, oh, I have failed in my life, I could not be a brahmachari, if he goes with a pessimistic attitude to grahastha ashram, what is going to happen? You know, if what we expect is what we are going to get, grahastha ashram is going to miss it. But if one sees that this is also a way for spiritual advancement, I have to follow the other principles, but it is a bona fide way for spiritual advancement. And it makes spiritual advancement. So if a community has to be built, then it has to be built on the foundation of respect and cooperation. So without the respect and cooperation, then there can be a lot of... If you see the Vedic culture, it's the renunciates were always there. But who carried on the culture? You know, if you look at the history of India, India was a very prosperous country. That's why the Muslims came, that's why the Europeans came. Now, who made the country prosperous? Now, if you want to be self-righteous, you can think of the call, the Brahmacharya, Sannyasis, the Chanti, Hare Krishna, the country was prosperous. And that may be true in the ultimate sense. But in the practical sense, the grahastha ashram was very strong. The people were tilling the land, the kings were ruling the kingdom, the business were doing business. So we should not think that the Vedic culture was entirely otherworldly. India had tremendous amount of this worldly prosperity also. And who are the people who are going to bring this world to prosperity? It's certainly not the renounced order. It's the householder order. So, the householder order was never neglected or minimized. They have to understand that there is a higher goal to life. And that higher goal to life is to be pursued at a particular time of life. But when they are pursuing a particular goal, then they have to focus on that. Srila Prabhupada himself in his householder life worked so hard. He's traveling from this place, starting a business here, closing it, then going there, starting a business over there. He's not neglectful of his duties. He did his duties to the best, and at one particular point of time, he felt that he has done all that he could do, and then higher obligations for him, he left. So, any questions about this? Yes, please.
when we are trying to establish a training system for Varnashrama, and simultaneously it is said, allow Shudra Sambhava. So how do we understand other classes will come on, then Brahma, Kshatriya, the devil will be Shudra Sambhava?
This is a very good question. You say, allow Shudra Sambhava, then how can we have Varnashram training? अदर वचन जन्मना जायते संस्कारा भवेत् विजयः वेद पठनात् भवेत् इत्र ब्रह्म जानाति इति ब्राह्मण. सो व्हेन यू टॉक अबाउट शूद्र इन माय अंडरस्टैंडिंग एट लीस्ट आई हैव टॉक्ड टू सेवरल डिवोटीज आल्सो. सो इट्स वी आर टॉकिंग अबाउट गुण एंड कर्म. सो डिफरेंट पीपल विल हैव डिफरेंट कर्म. नाउ guna and karma, if you want to translate it, you can translate their character and competence. You know, the values and the skills. Guna is the values and the karma is the skills. So in every generation, in every society, there will be certain people who will have intellectual skills. There will be certain people who have managerial skills. There will be certain people who will have money-making skills. There are certain people who will have artisan or technical skills, physical skills. So these are always going to be there. Skills are going to be born in every generation. But what happens in Kali Yuga is everybody has the values of a Shudra. Everybody is interested simply in the gratification. Now Einstein is considered the greatest intellectual of the last century. But look at Einstein's personal life. You know, he had a love affair with a college mate, and then he got married to her, and then at a very, he got frustrated with her, so he had an affair with one of his cousins. And for many years that affair dragged on, and finally he had a very harsh divorce with his wife, and then he married his cousin. So, you know, he had the karma, he had a brilliant intellectual. But one of the characteristics of a Brahminical person is guna. He should have self-control. He didn't have that self-control. So, and we see that in most intellectuals. They don't really have any self-control. Many of the, like we often tell that story also of how that PhD person who had done his PhD in Jiva Goswami's writings, and he was smoking and drinking. So now for him to study Jiva Goswami's literature, he probably needs to Sanskrit, he needs to understand the philosophy. So he has the karma, but he does not have the guna. So kalau shudra sambhava means everybody has the guna of a shudra. But there will be always people with different karma. And what we have to do by training is to help people develop the particular guna of their ashram. So if a person is intellectual, he should learn to be satisfied with his intellectual pursuits and intellectual accomplishments. Because through that, through his intellectual pursuits and accomplishments, he can become connected with Krishna. If somebody is a Kshatriya, then he will do managerial things. But through that, by offering that to Krishna, he should become satisfied. He should not want to control and dominate others. Is it clear? Yes. Any comments?
Interesting how you're saying how the intellectuals, they also need to have the quality of sense control to be considered novice and actually close to just on the lot. That everyone in Kali is Shudra because they don't have this sense control. And I was just reflecting on my experience growing up in the West that actually the concept of sense control is completely contrary to the goal of human life of people growing up in the West. They think sense gratification is the highest achievement, and the more one can experience and enjoy one's uncontrolled senses, the higher one's accomplishment is. So one intellectual could be sitting in here and arguing that you say that, you know, to be a Brahmana we have to have this, you know, intellectual knowledge and also control our senses, but the person would easily argue that, but this gratifying one's senses, this Chaturmasi kind of philosophy, that you just want to drink ghee and whoever can drink the most ghee is the winner.
Yeah.
He who gets the most toys when he dies, you know, he's the winner of the game.
Very
important point. Actually, in the Vedic culture, Jnana always led to Vairagya. In the modern society, Jnana leads to Rag, not Vairagya. Increasing attachment. See, in the Vedic culture, people studied material nature. When you talk about Jnana, it's about material nature. they study material nature, and that study produces detachment. This body is temporary. Let us become detached. This world is a place of suffering. Let us become detached. In modern society, jnana produces how can we bend nature to our will? And then we can live. See, modern science, is it a dispassionate search for truth and knowledge? No, it is a passionate search for power and control. Modern science, see, it's not a dispassionate search for knowledge and truth. It's a passionate search for power and control. And that's why pure science, practically nobody is studying it nowadays. Pure science means, I want to know how many what is actually life, what is the purpose of life? Now people want to know how things work and how I can make them work according to my ability. That is control. So knowledge, which is for the purpose not of understanding but control, that is knowledge in the mode of passion. So that knowledge in the mode of passion is what is pursued by today's intellectuals. So that's why. Because they feel that we can control nature according to our will. So they don't get detached from material nature, they become attached to material nature more and more. That's why even the intellectuals feel that the goal of life is enjoyment. And the purpose of the intellect is to increase their enjoyment. You see, that way, this can be a whole topic for a class, but you know, sense gratification involves providing the sense objects to the senses. So what technology primarily does is provide the sense objects in a more attractive way to people. Isn't it? When we have internet through which all the good looking forms are available. We have musical gadgets and instruments, all that seducing sounds are available. So like that, taste, touch, sound, smell, all these, what is technology doing? We make artificial perfumes. Using the latest technology for what purpose? To make the news. So technology is used to further sense gratification rather than to so that certain people have knowledge, the scientists have knowledge, but the purpose is not to take people towards wisdom but to just provide them a sense gratification. So what has happened is the people who are brahmanas, they have become controlled by not just the kshatriyas but by the vaishyas. For all practical purposes, the vaishyas are running society today. Of course, they are Vaishyas with Sudra qualities. Normally, Vaishyas will be charitable. But Vaishyas means those people who have money, they are controlling society. And because they are controlling society, if somebody wants to do research, I discussed this earlier also with some of you. So, one of my friends, he was doing his PhD in fluid mechanics. So, he had four options for PhD. And they are all giving them 2,000, 3,000 cycles. But then one option, well, they said they were giving 12,000 stipend. And this was almost like 8 years ago. So 12,000 was a big amount at that time for a stipend. And for a stipend, why are you giving so much? And what was the project in fluid mechanics? He had to do research to increase the longevity of a water bubble. He's wondering, why so much money in that? So he said, actually, this Lux company, you know, they manufacture luxury soaps. So he found that they had found that when these stinkingly rich people, they take a bath, they like it very much if the bubble stays on their body for a long time, the foam, and it sticks down their body. Very nice. So they said that actually we want to develop a soap whose foam and bubbles will stay for a long time. That's what it is. You know, I should do 26 years of my life to give a ticking sensation to wealthy people. And that's the way it is. The largest, wherever you can cater. Now most of you may work in software companies. Now ultimately you see, you are writing programs and doing cracking codes and making codes. But ultimately, what is it serving? Most of the time, they are creating systems to provide better sense gratification to materialistic people. That's how it is ultimately. So that is the problem. And the sense control is not thought of as a goal at all. Sense gratification is thought of as a goal. And that is very unfortunate.
Let's go further. So, yeah. Who is ready? Actually.
Actually. thing going has to do anything more than render devotional service to the Lord.
However, yes. Here Prabhupada says, actually, they are all meant to be pure devotees. Do nothing except serve the Lord. You know, avara palana, what is that called? Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that the load of maintaining, I am simply your servant, and the load of maintaining me is yours, my dear Lord. I will not bother about my maintenance. You only take care of me. That is factual reality. But not everyone is at the factual, that factual level of realization. Therefore,
however, in the lower stages of life, one cannot immediately adopt the activities of devotional service, nor can one completely stop today work. A conditioned soul is accustomed to working for sense gratification, for his own selfish interest, immediate or extended. An ordinary man works for his own sense enjoyment, and when his principle of sense enjoyment is extended to include society, nation, or humanity in general, it assumes various attractive names such as altruism, socialism, communism, nationalism, humanitarianism, etc. These isms are certainly very attractive forms of karma bandhana.
You want a powerful way of attractive forms of karma bandhana. Is what you say, you know, iron fix the velvet glow. Prabhupada said, these isms, what is it? It is an attractive form of karma bandhana. It will stay bound in material existence. So we'll discuss about this more as Prabhupada talks about social service. But the point is that if we are still attached to society, then we are in the bodily conception of life. If I want to take care of, I am from Tamil, so we have a Tamil organization, and I'll take care of all Tamil people. If any Tamil person is in danger, I'll protect him. Or if I am from India, I will protect all other Indians. It's nice, it's surely better than just thinking of my own family. But from the spiritual point of view, it is not much use. It is going to keep us in bondage. So therefore, but because these are more sattva-guni, so they appear more noble and attractive to people. That's why Prabhupada says they are attractive forms of karma. You know? They are attractive forms. See, when socialism and communism started, the manifesto, the promise was glorious. There will be no more disparity between rich and poor, there will be no poor haves and have not, everybody will have equal. And it seemed to be a very noble idea. And Karl Marx, when he wrote his book, The Communist Manifesto, you know, he just inspired masses, people all over the world with a vision of an equal society. But the fact of the matter is that even when communism was at its peak, what happened in Russia? Even on the spiritual point of view, even from a material point of view, there was still the ruler and the ruled. And the ruler always had more power than the ruled. That's why one political commentator, George Orwell, he was known to be a sarcastic writer. So he said, in communism, all people are equal, but some are more equal than others. So, you cannot avoid equality. So that's why we actually perpetuate karma bandhana in the hope of trying to bring about an artificial equality. So, the attractive form of karma bandhana. Yeah.
But the Vedic instruction of each of nation is that if one actually wants to live for any of the above isms, he should make them God-centered.
Yes, in the Prabhupada is even broader mind. Not in nothing, communism, nationalism, all the nonsense, make the God centered.
There is no harm in becoming a family man, or an altruist, a socialist, a communist, a nationalist, or a humanitarian, provided that one executes his activities in relation with each of us here, the God centered principle.
Yeah. So, but again, communist is also a word which has change connotations. You know, say he's a communist, especially in the West, that is not seen as very positive, isn't it? Communists, my God, communists are the people who are making nuclear weapons and throw the weapons on us. So, and that is the picture after the fall of PSSR. Communism doesn't have a very positive sense, but when Prabhupada was writing this, at that time, India was very attracted to communism because USSR has taken that model, and India had also adopted that model. So Prabhupada said, yes, if you want to become a communist, become a communist. But do it for God. Prabhupada is spiritual communism. So now, begin by bringing God into sense gratification life. So next one Prabhupada will say that yes, you can continue sense gratification life, but God, bring God into it. But if you don't bring God into it, then your sense gratification life is completely useless. That's what we will discuss in the next paragraph. Next one.
Well,
Prabhupada is not exactly saying that these will lead to Naishkarma immediately. It's not that somebody is loving his nation and dies for the nation, that won't lead to Naishkarma. But that person is at least living for a more selfless cause, then it will just under gratification. In one sense, we can talk about spiritual life, advancement in spiritual life, as a progressive increase in selflessness. Initially, one is just concerned with himself, my senses. So even when a person becomes a grahastha, you know, he has to become a bit more selfless. You know, he has to consider the views of his family, wife, his children, his parents. So family life also creates some culture of sacrifice and selflessness. And if that culture of sacrifice and selflessness is not there, even family life cannot survive. And that's what is happening in the West. In the West, what they call is the I generation, you know, the I specialists. The I specialists, not this I specialist, the big I specialists. It's a generation of obsessive individualism. I first and I only. So I first and I only. So even the family can't survive that. That's why you see the Karmakanda literature, Grahastha Dharma is very much glorified. It's not glorified as a supreme, but if a person is responsible for his family, then he also has to have a certain amount of selflessness and sacrifice and responsibility by that. It is good. But at the same scripture, at a particular sort of point of time, there's a sort of condemn family attachment. Why? Because that selflessness is good initially for expanding one's reach of selflessness for oneself to one's family. But then, that is not enough, one has to expand itself. So for we expand it to the society, to the nation, to the world, to all living beings. Ultimately, we expand it to God. So pure devotion means when we become selfless for God. There's a famous patriot in America. He said, the only regret of my life is that I have only one life to offer to America. See, this is a sentiment of pure devotion, but it's misdirected towards the nation. I only want life to offer. So, the point is, I think there is some amount of selflessness there, but the selflessness will expand more and more. That's glorious. So, immediately it doesn't lead to Naishkarma, but it is a progressive step towards that. That's why we see even in our observation in voices, those devotees who were responsible earlier in their academic lives, they become responsible devotees also. Those who were irresponsible earlier, unless they change their ways, so that irresponsibility as a habit, if it stays, then they can't become responsible devotees. Now, it's not that all hippies became devotees. A small percentage of hippies became devotees, and those hippies who were serious spiritual seekers, they actually could take up the spiritual principles, and they have become now very advanced devotees. So, responsibility or selflessness to sacrifice, they are very important to one's onward spiritual growth. That's why it will not lead to Naishkarma immediately, but it is a progress in that direction. Okay? Yes. Me?
Yeah. Really?
I, me.
Okay. Me generation.
It doesn't change much.
Maybe.
Actually, that's why,
you know, like, when I was working with Dandi Maharaj, so Dandi Maharaj, I was working on the Kalpamaji Bodhi, so Dandi Maharaj called me and asked me, I heard that when bodies want to join, you tell them that you have to wait to complete their education and do a job. Hey, somebody wants to surrender to Krishna, it's such a rare thing, why are you stopping them? I explained to Maharaj, actually, you know, many times parents take loans for their children and the parents expect that the children pay, the sons pay off their debts, pay for their marriages. And then otherwise if they don't do this, it will create an uproar in society. So Maharaj said, he says, America has no concept of paying loans and getting sisters married. So, in fact, you know, as soon as the children attend teenage, just leave the parents. And you know, the parents support the children or the children support the parents. So,
the culture is different.
So, Prabhupada's time they could allow like that to join immediately. But in India, you know, we don't want to upset the social order. We want to create a higher order. It's very interesting that if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, Rupa Goswami was the first person who left home. And went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sanatana Goswami went after that. But interestingly, Sanatana Goswami went to Vrindavan, and then Rupa Goswami went to Vrindavan, came back, met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again, and then Rupa Goswami came back to Bengal. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Shivakapuri, Rupa Goswami came back to Bengal. And then, actually, from there he went to Puri. That's why the first chapter, so the 90th chapter of Bhadrali Rai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to Rupa Goswami. So they were given at Prayag. Then he gave an instruction to Sanatana Goswami at Varanasi. And then 25th chapter describes that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Rupa Goswami met again. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came back to Puri and Rupa Goswami came back to Bengal. And Rupa Goswami was 1 year in Bengal. And Prabhupada writes in the purport over there, right? Krishna Karaja says that he was settling financial affairs for his family members and relatives over there. And then Prabhupada writes, although Rupa Goswami was detached, he was not unfair to his family members. So this is the Acharya, Rupa Goswami, completely detached, but still he was not unfair. So you know, we don't want to disrupt the social order. Yeah, if our parents have done something for us, we are expecting something, we do it, and then we join. If we learn that culture of responsibility, then we will be able to carry on that culture of responsibility in our life. So, the theme of these verses is of gradually developing increasing selflessness. Now Prabhupada will explain how without God everything is useless. Who's reading? Somebody else? In the Bhagavad Gita.
In the Bhagavad Gita, 2.40.
Lord Krishna. 2.40? Neha Vikramanam.
Lord Krishna states that God-centered activities are so valuable that just a few of them save a person from the greatest danger. The greatest danger of life is the danger of gliding down again into the evolutionary cycle of birth and death among the 8,400,000 species. If somehow or other a man misses the spiritual opportunity afforded by this human form of life and falls down again into the evolutionary cycle, he must be considered most unfortunate.
Most unfortunate. It's a very beautiful phrase. The spiritual opportunity afforded by the human form of life. So the soul is spiritual, but the soul does not have an opportunity to realize its spiritual nature in the lower form of life. The soul has the opportunity to realize its spiritual nature only in the human form of life. So, just like, you know, we have certain circumstances of life in our lives, where, like in India, we get to Harinam Kirtan very nicely. If you go to the Islamic countries, you cannot go Harinam Kirtan, isn't it? So, although the soul is, same soul is there, certain physical circumstances, material circumstances, can hamper the expression of the spiritual nature. This is a simple example. But, in the lower species, the spiritual opportunity is not there. Of course, there is an exception. If some soul starts spiritual life in a human form and then glides down to a lower form because of certain wrong choices, imprudent choices, then the soul can continue spiritual advancement at a minimal level, in a subhuman form also. You cannot start spiritual life in a, you cannot start spiritual life by a conscious choice in the lower species. Now some dog when he is living in a temple and he gets some prasad, he is not making conscious choice like that. In a sense, but if the dog has in a previous life been a human being who was a devotee and he becomes a dog, what happens? Purva bhyasena tena iva rijate yava shopita. By the cultivation from the previous life, one is helplessly attracted to Krishna. How many of you have read that book of Jananda Maharaj, Animals in Krishna Consciousness?
Yes, that is beautiful book, isn't it?
It's very amazing how different temples all over the country. For example, I think there was something to tell about one temple in Malaysia, where every day at the evening Gaurati time, one dog would come and stand outside the door and take darshan of Gaurati. And then if you try to drive him away, he would not go away. If you shoo him, he will not bark or shower by it. But you go away and sit in a distance. And after you go away, he will again come back. And then it happens day after day, week after week, and eventually they realize, actually this dog is a devotee. And for many months, almost a year, he was coming, and one day he didn't come only. And they found that he had died. So there are, so Maharaj has compiled many incidents like that. You have that book with you here? You have a copy here?
I saw in Ashram.
It's a very thrilling book, you know, especially for our skeptical minds. This sort of dramatic protection from is quite sensational. So, that book is? Oh, really? Actually, I read one news. It actually has come on Indian television. I will check if I have. There is one South Indian temple. It's a crocodile who is vegetarian. That's quite sensitive. They actually shot it. So near the temple, it's Vishnu temple, and there's a well. There's a small lake. And there, there is this crocodile. And this crocodile only eats rice which is offered to the deity. So, actually, many people come just to see that and thought that they sponsor the rice for the deity, and then the rice is brought in front of the crocodile. And then the crocodile eats it. The crocodile doesn't harm anyone. It's been there for years. So actually the program was shown on NDTV. So I got the news of that. I mean, if you get the actual visual, it will be very sensational.
So we were taking one drop. They took it as bath there. And they were even doing Harinam. They were there in the throat.
Dumb.
When getting lectures, they were around the lecture only.
Just sitting here. Take the risk of going into other territories, Christian party, even though other
territories. Oh, and while we were leaving, they again sat down, like in a respect. So they were not having no barking or thing.
Amazing. So, actually I always had this question. You say the spiritual currents always stay with us and they never go away. So what does it mean the spiritual currents stay? What is it that actually stays? What stays in the attraction to Krishna like matter what? So, as Krishna is a very beautiful thing, Purvabhyasena tena iva riyateya avashopita. Helplessly one is attracted. One is not consciously choosing to be attracted, but still one is attracted. So, by this attraction, one wants to go closer to God, go closer to spirituality. However, you know, although that attraction is there, along with that the free will is also there. So, no matter how much a person has made advancement and how much a person has developed attraction to Krishna, still the free will is there, and that free will can be misused at any time. But the difference is, when an advanced devotee, if sometimes he misuses his free will and does something wrong, then because the mind is there, which is always repelling us towards devilish things, but because there is a higher attraction, the devotee cannot experience any real happiness in material life. And because he cannot experience any real happiness in material life, he will get very frustrated and he will soon come back. There is a famous lecture of Maharaj, fallen devotee is most miserable. And if any of you are not heard it, you should please hear it. Beautiful lecture. So Vara says that lecture, if any of you have plans to enjoy Sangha gratification, I'm sorry to inform you that it is too late. You have already chanted Hare Krishna. You cannot enjoy those gratification now. You already tasted something high. You can try by a free will. You can try. Going back to the indulgences. But you won't get any pleasure. Okay, because the mind is there, the mind will always keep prompting. And when the mind keeps prompting, we may succumb to the mind's prompting and do those wrong things. But we will not get any pleasure. So in that sense, the attraction will stay. But we have to, if there's attraction, we have to act according to the attraction to become attractive. That's why even if a devotee falls down sometimes, it's an advanced devotee. The Prabhupada also sometimes on disciples would do something grievously wrong. But then they would come back, you know, Prabhupada would not, if they had been leaders earlier, Prabhupada would not treat them, now you become new bhakta and clean the floor. Prabhupada would give them responsible positions. Not just for the sake of their ego or something like that. So they had that responsibility, they had the ability to take up responsible services and they had the future advancement. But it was the wrong choice of free will that they had made. So that's how. Now Prabhupada is not talking here of a spiritually advanced person falling back to lower species. He's talking about a materialistic person falling back to lower species. If a devotee falls back to a lower species, he will somehow be attracted to Krishna. But a materialistic person falls back to a lower species, just go on cycle of birth and death for quite a long time. Yes?
We discussed that Paramatma is there in the heart of the living. And for a non-devotee, the Paramatma does not, he is neutral. He does not interfere in his activity. But once he becomes a devotee, then Paramatma personally, you know, interferes in his life. So when, in the example that we discussed, that the devotee is advanced. Which means that Lord is personally interfering in life. So at such a point when the devotee is about to make a mistake or he is about to make misuse of the doesn't the Lord interfere with him? Because he is an advanced devotee.
The Lord will interfere surely for advanced devotee. It will discourage him from misusing his freedom. But the Lord never stops our freedom. So then he will allow us to bear the consequences of the misuse of freedom and learn by that. So he never stops our freedom in any situation.
So can you give one example how he tries to influence, or how he tries to, he may not directly stop, but how he tries to influence?
Well, sometimes it may happen that suppose we are getting some wrong desires in our heart. You know, we read Prabhupada's book to find something exactly about that. Like talking to some other devotee, hearing some lectures, we get sometimes, oh, this is wrong, this should not be done. We get a lot of inspiration, guidance, and support to make the right choice. But then Maya is also there. Maya will keep prompting us to the wrong choice also. So ultimately, it boils down to our choice, our free will. But the Lord offers us a lot of facilities for making the right choice. Lots of facilities in Lord. The Lord will give us the facilities to make the right choice, and the Lord will also give us spiritual happiness which comes by making the right choice. But still, if we cultivate the memories and desires of enjoying the wrong way, the Lord will not interfere. Lord will not stop.
Is it also true that at an advanced stage, just to test our is it true that Lord may purposely put such a test of illusion or a test of maya to test our
Does the Lord purposely put test to check us? What do you mean by purposely? It's a part of spiritual advancement. It's a part of spiritual advancement to be tested. So everybody will have to go through the test. Yeah, everybody will have to go through the test. So I said the real battle begins after the battle is won. What does that mean? That means, for example, now we do a very nice service. Sing very nicely, speak very nicely, manage very nicely, and there, so we have won the battle. But after that, it's the real battle. Do we take credit and become proud? Or do we stay humble? So at one level, just controlling senses is a big struggle. But as one advances, it's not just a matter of controlling senses, it's a matter of doing wonderful things and staying humble. It's not easy. That's why for advanced people, the real battle begins after the battle is won. So after the battle of doing some wonderful services won, the real battle of not taking credit and becoming proud begins.
On this article, interjection by the Paramatma into the life of the devotee, I'd like to share one experience. When I was very new devotee, maybe 10 days living in the association of devotees, I was living in Ireland and I was going out on the street and playing my trumpet, and I would get donations, and then whenever someone would give a donation, I would give them a book. So I saw someone playing, another musician playing on the street. He was playing a flute, a bamboo flute. So I said, oh, maybe he's been to India, maybe this is the person, perfect advanced person. And I had Bhagavad Gita, someone had given me a big donation, not taking the Bhagavad Gita. So I gave him the Bhagavad Gita. And he started blaspheming Krishna like anything, this person, like he had me Mayavad or something. I'm 10 days in this time, this is the first time I experienced anything like this. And I was getting some arguments in my mind, you know, of how to, you know, fight against him. But I was bewildered and I did not say anything. And then in my heart, some voice was going, run away, run away, run away. So, but I stayed and listened to him some more time, blaspheme Krishna. I didn't run away, right away. And then I went back to the ashram and the next morning I was chanting my japa, and I was not feeling the same ecstasy that I had been feeling previously in chanting. When I first started chanting, all of us we've experienced that when we first started, in the very beginning, there's a lot of ecstasy that encourages us in Krishna consciousness. Like a sale is going on at the beginning, and you have to pay more later. So then I'm thinking, why am I not getting this ecstasy anymore? And I just open, I take a book and I open NOD, Netto Devotion, and it goes right to the page of blasphemy. And it explains that if you sit and you listen to, the first thing you should do, you should try to defeat the person. If you can't defeat him, you should either kill him or kill yourself or run away. And it says, well, I didn't kill him, but I didn't kill myself, I didn't run away. And then if you don't do that, then you lose your spiritual credit. So it's, oh, that is what happens to me. So it was very shocked. I got a lot of faith because, you know, I pulled the book out of so many books and I opened a page and there were so many pages of this resurrected and I think it was fun.
Amazing. Sad. You know, when he read this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's verse, Nadananda Dinanda Sundar, he was very inspired by that.
And everybody in the West is searching for Dhana Jana Sundar.
I don't want any of this. What is that?
I have a million lives. Amazing.
So, yeah, so the Super Soul does help us. Actually, to the extent we hear the Super Soul's voice, to the extent he will speak more to us. And to the extent we don't hear his voice, to the extent he will stop speaking to us. And then, once he stops speaking, then we are in great danger. Because, you know, conscience is like our internal protection. Our conscience becomes mute. See, for many people, for people who are like serial killers, conscience is mute. They can kill people. For those who are like, who are rapists or serial killers or mercenaries who kill for money, they have just muted their conscience. They can kill in cold blood and don't feel anything. Because super souls don't do this, don't care. And then once their internal protection stops, it's very difficult for us to actually make the right choices or to stop ourselves from making the wrong choices. Because there's nothing inside. A very beautiful analogy is that conscience is like the watchdog who barks when the thief of sin comes to steal our bhakti. When the thief of sin comes to steal our bhakti, he first comes, like the watchdog who barks. So conscience is the watchdog. So we should take a stick and beat the thief away when the watchdog starts barking. But unfortunately, he takes the stick and beat the watchdog. Shut up! I want to do this.
That is very unfortunate.
So Krishna does, as inner guide, help us.
I'll give him giving the demons poison, but I'm giving the
कृष्ण भजे माजे विषय सुख somebody worships Krishna and desires mental enjoyment. He's asking for, he's ignorant and he's asking for poison. But I am ignorant, therefore I'll give him the nectar and make him forget the poison. Yes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying this. That is surely true, but again, the Lord doesn't force. The Lord doesn't force. The Lord will give the Jagannath, but even after getting the Jagannath, you don't forget the vision. Forgetting or remembering is our choice. Sometimes our memories just come in our minds and nasty memories from the past. But it's also up to us how we should cultivate those memories. If you cultivate devotional memories, the memories of the kirtans, the darshans, the yatras, the classes that we had, you cultivate those memories, then those memories will grow. So this dhyayato principle can work both ways. You can do dhyayato of mundane things, you can do dhyayato of spiritual things. But generally, because we have been materialistic for so long, so materialistic dhyayato happens much more spontaneously. Whereas devotional dhyayato takes time long. As soon as we see a woman, we go into ritual samadhi. Dhyayato visharantam. But then, when we go and take darshan, we may have to consciously recite some verses, contemplate on some pastime. And then also, we will also experience an absorption by taking darshan. But we require some conscious effort. And the wonderful thing is, once we go beyond another nirvritti to nishtha and ruchi, then the way our mind gets spontaneously start contemplating on sense objects, our mind will start contemplating on Krishna consciousness spontaneously. But till that time, the center was spoiled. So, yes, Krishna does help, surely. Krishna will give us opportunities for higher taste. But we see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that, at the same time, what does he do with Haridas Thakur? So, Karan does. No, he is very heavy with him. So, how the Lord will apply the principle is very, of course, Bhakti Sanjay Thakur said that is an extreme example. Meant to teach us a lesson. That is fine. At the same time, how the Lord applies the principle is very. If somebody wants to hold on to the memory of the sense gratification, the Lord will not force. Okay, this is what you think. Do you enjoy it? Try it out. And when you are convinced that God will help you, I'll be there for you. Yeah. Due to his defective senses.
Due to his defective senses, a foolish man cannot see that this is happening.
So what is happening? That we are losing the spiritual opportunity. Now you wonder how do defective senses, so Prabhupada is not talking about the defects of the senses in terms of, you know, not being able to see above the visual range or below the visual range. He's talking about defective senses means not having the long-term perception, not understanding, you know, what is that verse? Vimudhanan pashyanti pashyanti yana chakshusha. In chapter 11 verse God Krishna described that the foolish person cannot see this, but the wise person can see this with the eyes of knowledge. So defective senses means the senses which are not illumined by knowledge. We cannot see. So material existence means we don't know where we were, where we are going to go. And what are the consequences of what we are doing right now? Just like a blind plane. If a person is just blindfolded and just trying to fool, feel his way and go around, you fall down from a mountain cliff, fall into a river, you run over by a vehicle, anything can happen. So like that, without knowledge, the person just doesn't know what is happening. You know that well-known pastime. Srila Prabhupada was telling that, if you are not careful, you will become a dog in the next life. And the best dogs are very comfortable. So in fact there is dog food and dog dress and there are dog psychologists also. A dog has got depression, please give him some counseling. Can you imagine? Dog psychologist. So much infatuation with dogs. But, so people think dog life is very comfortable. But it is not, you know, it is actually very unfortunate. So this person said, Swamiji, I have no problem becoming a dog. I said, you have no lessons. You know, what can you preach to such a person?
How can you preach to such a person?
Yes.
My family has a dog, my mother, and the dog was having some heart problems, so they did heart surgery on the dog. Tremendous, thousands and thousands of dollars expense. To do like open heart surgery on the dog. So the surgery was successful. The dog is still living. And then the dog would become nervous, right? Especially when the thunder was coming, the dog would start trembling. So they took the dog to a dog psychologist. So the dog has nervous condition. So the psychologist prescribed some medication for the dog. It says, before the thunderstorms, you give these sedatives to the dog so that the dog's nerves will be more shanti, like this. So, like this, like before thunder is going, they're giving the medicine to the dog so the dog is peaceful. And they say, okay, from time to time, take the dog to the dog psychiatrist so the dog can be monitored like this. So thousands and thousands of dollars they spend on this stuff.
So the first one is testimony here.
Open heart surgery.
But there are
anxiety. Will the dog survive or not? To the hospital. Anesthesia. Whole medical team is there.
So, a very beautiful article. This is a slightly different topic, very nice topic. A beautiful article in Back to Godhead by, I think, Purana Mataji. She wrote about how it is dangerous to be attached to pets and how Chedaparasa by being attached to a pet to manifest from the spiritual path. Now, in the West, many devotees also have pets. So, some other devotee wrote that, but Shivanand said he loved the dog and because of him, the dog got animated. So there's a whole correspondence. The vaccines, they come alive by controversies. So we also encourage controversies. So
okay, that's fine. But Shivanand Singh was able to pull the dog up and the deer pulled the Jayadharan down. So don't assume that you are Shivanand Singh.
And then Jayadharan, you know.
So the
so actually at the
one of the greatest obstacles into the spiritual life is to assume that one is the advanced youth and to imitate the practices of advanced youth. You know, Radha Maharaj also in one lecture.
What
was
that? Very amazing thing.
The worst thing that you can do for your spiritual life is to think that you are advanced yoga. Same thing. So you know, actually speaking, the Bhagavatam is not a low level book. And Jad Bharat or Bharat Maharaj was a very advanced yoga. But he got attached to a deer. So if you get attached to a deer like that, now Shivananda Singh, even if you see that way, Shivananda Singh did not bring that dog into his household and make him object of lifelong cultivation. Just passing along, he says, he wants to come to pilgrimage, he wants to come. So he took him with him. And he was concerned that, okay, he is coming on a pilgrimage, and I have to take care of him. So that sense of responsibility was there. But there is no description, even in Jatinjaratamur, that Shivananda Singh had a pet dog at his home. So that example also is not telling. So actually, attachments are always dangerous. And what has happened in the West is, there is a lot of sensitivity towards animals, which has also led to vegetarianism, which is good. There is a PETA organization, People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, which says that animals should be taken care of. But the problem with godless values, with any values brought along without God in it, is that there is always a sense, they are always imbalanced. Imbalance means what? Many times, like there's no need to imagine this, but what they do is the advertisements for protecting animals. So they will show a popular movie star, a lady without any clothes, and they will show a dog, or a, not a dog, some animal, a pig, or some animal she's eaten, like a goat. and then you saw the arrows, the parts of the animal and the parts of the dog. And the animals also have parts like your favorite film star. Do you want to eat the animal? And the film actress who does this, she is considered, she is a glorious service to society. So they said this World Cup was there. So after the World Cup, and India was in the semi-finals, some Bollywood model, she said, you know, I want to motivate the Indian team to win. So she said, if the Indian team wins, then I will bear myself for that pleasure. And it created such a big media hype. And then the top of it, this is India. So there's a animal activist, she wrote back, and that also made very high. If you want to bear, don't bear for the wealthy cricketer, bear for the poor animal.
So there is no, but there is some good values which come up,
but it's those values are completely unbalanced. That's why, what are the point I'm making? Yeah, godless values are always imbalanced. So it's very absurd, you know, Ashuchi Vrataha.
Krishna will work at the moment, correctly.
So, Ashuchi Vrataha, yes,
is good that you don't eat animals.
But this is not the way to promote that.
You are trying to cure people's lust, but you are triggering lust. You are trying to cure people's greed for animal flesh, but you are triggering lust in their hearts. What is the use of that?
So, without
God, everything is useless.
Now, you are saying about defective senses, you know. Without Jnana Chakshusha, we cannot see what is happening actually in life. So, these people actually, they think they are doing a very noble service. But they can't see how they are creating so much imbalance and disorder in society.
Hey boy.
Consequently,
Sri Vishwamitra advises us to exert our energy in the spirit of Vishavasya. Being so engaged, we may wish to live for many, many years. Otherwise, a long life in itself has no value. A tree lives for hundreds of years, but there is no point in living a long time like trees, or breathing like bellows, or begetting children like hogs and dogs, or eating like camels.
Which is this verse? Yeah, Taravar Kimna Jeevan. So, is it someone in the Proverbs 14 verses in their English translations? Now, the next sentence is a classic sentence.
Can you repeat this? God-centered life is more valuable than a colossal hope of a life dedicated to godless altruism or socialism.
Yes. Let us repeat it. Humble God-centered life,
is
more valuable than
a colossal
hopes
of a life
dedicated to godless altruism or socialism. Colossal hopes. Colossal of it is a giant word. The hope of the giant hopes. Because why is calling it a colossal hoax? Because such people attack society. You know, yes, this person is so noble, so selfless. But what spiritual good is such a person bringing to society? He is not bringing people closer to God. As a Prabhupada wrote a letter to Mahatma Gandhi and he said, you know, you have lived your life for the service of the nation, but now it is time for you. So you have been carrying around the Gita, but now it is time for you to actually be according to the Gita. So, I request you that you please retire with me for at least 3 months, I think 3 months or 2 months or 3 months, and we will discuss the Bhagavad Gita and we will discuss how to spread the teaching of the Gita all over the world. And if you don't do this, it's a prophecy over me. You will meet the most inglorious death. And that's what happened, very unfortunately.
Yes, so now this point was, without God consciousness, everything is useless.
Therefore, make all altruism, all isms, into karma yoga. As last. Yes, please.
Sir, one question. Whenever teaching activity, they go for some people who are very good in academics or Krishna or whatever. And when these kind of people become devotees, and if they do something good, because obviously they have skills.
Correct.
That's the material skills they got of karma. Then they are considered to be a better devotee. Then a humble God-centered devotee, but previously also a devotee. Somebody becomes just like a devotee, came in, somebody have much skills, it's patronization also. Somebody came in later, but he was not skilled. he's considered more advanced than this one, and whole thing goes around him.
Yeah, I understand this question. Somebody may be more talented materially, and then he gets more, more you can say limelight, more gets responsibility, more attention, recognition, posts also. Well, you see that spiritual life has two aspects. One is the transcendental aspect, and another is the practical aspect. So, from a practical point of view, you know, we want to have some devotee may be very young, but he is a good singer. When we are going to do public kirtans in public program, we would like to have a good singer over there. So that talent will be used to attract common people towards Krishna. But does that devotee who is actually doing that service should also be trained to understand that his material qualities are not to be equated with spiritual advancement? We cannot stop that from happening in a society. Because a society, if an organization has to function, then the organization requires materially competent people for function. Of course, we need them to be spiritually advanced also, but the ultimate organization has substance. But from a practical point of view, you see, there's a Brahmana, a Brahmana's Brahmanatva, a Brahmana's Brahmana's saintliness or sattva-guna cannot benefit society unless it is coupled with the Kshatriya's administration. Brahmana's spirit is not to go around and preach. Or even if he goes around to preach, Brahmana will not to follow. You know, you just said, whoever comes for lecture, you will speak less. He will be touched. So the actual administration is under Kshatriya. As the Prabhupada said, we want Brahmana's and the Kshatriya's spirit. The Brahmanas are attached. Kshatriyas are, oh, we want to change, we want to improve this world. We want to. The Ishwar Bhav is there, but the Ishwar Bhav is noted to bring in the will of the actual Ishwar. That's not it. So, yes, it is going to inevitably happen in society. In an organization, it is going to inevitably happen that those who are materially competent will get more attention, will get more recognition. But there should be a system, especially appearing and chanting regularly, by which the devotees understand that these material advancements, these material qualities in themselves do not attract Krishna. And that should not be equated with spiritual advancement. And that's why, I mean, I have seen when you have the godbrothers of Arahant Maharaj come, you know, he does not talk so much about their accomplishments. If Dhruta Karma Guru came to Mumbai, he did not talk so much about his, you know, so many conferences and this. He was just serving Prabhupada consistently for the last 35 years. He is focusing on efforts. So, I would say that consistency is the quality which Maharaj appreciates very often. He is godless. I mean, serving year after after year. So, the important thing is, like even Janivas and Pandayamrit Prabhu, well, they may not be very big people in terms of posts, but because they have the saintliness, they recognize and appreciate it. So, it's going to happen in general in an organization that those with material talent will be running the organization. But if the organization is a spiritual organization, then the spiritual systems of hearing and chanting and reading should alert devotees of what actual spiritual advancement is. An organizational advancement is not spiritual advancement. Yeah?
Adding to this, he has told the Maharaj many times that the goal of life is to become an instrument in the hand of Acharya.
Correct.
So that is great, forceful view, and then.
Correct.
When you become the instrument, then you get the miracle. Rather than person going on his own, trying to think, it may appear for some time that he's doing something, the whole system collapses after some time. So, my question is, if some person is focusing on a humble, God-centered life, rather than having that Ishwar Bhav, then will not God empower him over a period of time to be an instrument? And that person, we have seen also in our society, or outside anywhere, somebody may be very strong in the beginning, but because spiritual foundation was not strong, so over a period of time, system could not stand. And the one whose roots are very strong, over a period of time, grew up and he could change the...
That is also possible. Mm-hmm. It is an elaborate question. Can you go on for a few minutes? We should discuss it tomorrow. Can you go on to complete, actually? Only one paragraph remaining after this, short paragraph. So, okay. 2 points. Recently, when the question was that somebody who is spiritually advanced, who has strong spiritual roots of humble service attitude and God-centered life, he will not have material talents. But if he keeps serving, Krishna will empower him and then he will be able to do wonderful things. On the other hand, somebody has material talents but not spiritual strong foundation, may do wonderful things temporarily, but he will fall afterwards and that will create chaos also. So, why should we focus on devotees who have talents but not spiritual advancement actually? But I would say that both are triggered. You know, when recently Maharaj was giving this class in Mumbai, I was there and I asked him a question. So he spoke about how Sringi, he had power but without maturity and realization. Power without maturity and realization, power and position without maturity and realization can lead to disaster. That was what Maharaj spoke from that Sringi pastor. Sringi had the power and position in the Brahmana, but he did not have maturity and realization to understand what he was doing. So it can lead to disaster. So then I asked Maharaj this question. Actually, Gauram was going through, all of them said, very good question. Maharaj said a wrong answer after that. So, what the question was, I said, Maharaj, sometimes we may have certain material talents to do a particular service, but we may not have the spiritual advancement, spiritual maturity to take up that service. Now, if we don't take up that service, the service will never be done. On the other hand, if we take up the service because of lack of maturity, we may create trouble. So what should we do in this situation? So Maharaj gave a long answer. I have a transcription of the answer on that, but I will tell the main points here. First point Maharaj said is that Prabhupada encouraged even very young devotees to take up huge responsibilities. And he said, we should never think that we are ever qualified for anything. So our motivation for doing the service should not come from the talents that we have, but from the instruction that we have got from the devotees and spiritual master. So our qualification for doing the service is the instruction that we have got from the spiritual master or the Vaishnava master. So it is not that our material talent is a qualification, or it is not that the lack of spiritual advancement is a disqualification. Our qualification is that the devotees want us to do this. So if we have this consciousness in doing this service, but the devotees want me to do this service and for I am not qualified for it, but for their pleasure I am doing this, for system I am doing this, then we will be protected. So then that's it, that's the humble self attitude is coming in over. But in general, it's a very delicate situation. How it works is, our mind is so tricky. But if you don't do wonderful services, if you do wonderful services, we become proud. But if you don't do wonderful services, we'll become envious of those who are doing wonderful services. So there's no way to escape from that. The only, at that mundane level, there's no way to escape. The only way to escape is by spiritual advancement. And spiritual advancement comes by doing service. So yes, sometimes it may happen that when we are doing a particular service, we may start going on a wrong track, or rather we may be doing the material aspect very well without the spiritual foundation. Then the devotee said, stop this service. And they need to stop it. And if they are thinking that actually it is my qualification is coming from the instruction of the devotee, and the devotee said, we will stop, surely it will stop. But if we think that the material qualification, the material talent is the qualification, then we will say, why are they going to stop? I can do this service. You will present an object and you will create trouble. So if you remember the spiritual connection, our qualification is the instruction, the desire of the spiritual master. And Krishna will protect us and he will empower us, irrespective of whether we have the talents or not. Now, another aspect is, yes, Krishna can empower anyone and everyone, but that doesn't happen all the time. It's not necessary that somebody who is not a good manager by empowering will become an excellent manager. It doesn't happen. That empowerment is there in that particular person's particular field. But it's not that, it may happen sometimes, but it may not happen most of the time also. Because Krishna will not change the guru and karma of a person entirely. So, it's not that by empowerment, somebody who is a very poor singer will become a wonderful singer. It can happen, but it may not happen also. So, in general, if people have a particular talent, generalize them Krishna service. And they can make such advancement by that, and they can also attract people to Krishna like that. And then their upward connection with their authorities will protect them when they are making their, doing their service. Quickly complete this now. Last two paragraphs, easily. So now the last one Prabhupada is making is make all two altruism into Karma Yoga. Even altruistic?
When altruistic activities are executed in the spirit of Sri Ishwaparishad, they become a form of Karma Yoga. Such activities are recommended in the Bhagavad Gita 18.5 and 9. For they guarantee their executor protection from the danger of sliding down into the evolutionary process of God centered. Even though such God centered activities may be half finished, they are still good for the executor because they will guarantee him a human form in his next life. In this way,
just one point about this. Jaya Bharat did not get a human form, but he did not, he lost the human form, but he retained the human consciousness. His consciousness was like a serious human sadhaka. Sometimes even a devotee, it may happen, like one of our Prashant was once taken for yatra and one Mataji, one young girl, she got haunted by a ghost. And they were trying to do various things to get the ghost out. And the ghost said, no, I want to go to Mayapur. Don't try to drive me away, after you take me to Mayapur, I will leave. And they were shocked, the voice was speaking through her. She was a female, but a male voice was speaking through her. And finally, he spoke that, apparently some devotee was something to say about him. So, how can you listen to him? Well, sometimes the law of karma may work in a particular way, because if a person has a particular activity, like Bharat Maharaj developed attachment to a deer. So, one law is that whatever you think of at the time of death, that will come upon us. But others, that's the material law. And the spiritual law is that if you develop attraction to Krishna, that facility for being attracted to Krishna will never be taken away. So how are these two laws reconciled? In this case, because he is attached to a deer, he is still the body of a deer. But his human consciousness is different. Similarly, somebody committed suicide, they got a ghost body. But even in the ghost body, the human consciousness is there. And the whole desire is to go to Mayapur. So like that, whatever bhakti we do, that will never be lost. But we don't have to go by that long track. It's better that we take the fast track and finish off in this life itself. Yeah.
In this way, one can have another chance to improve his position on the path of liberation. How one can execute God's in the activities is elaborately explained in the Sufi Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. We have rendered this book in English as Nectar of Devotion. We recommend this valuable book to all who are interested in performing their activities in the spirit of Sri Ishwaparishad.
See now, Ishwaparishad is actually an Upanishadic book. He is talking about Brahman. And Prabhupada says, please read Nectar of Devotion. It's just extreme. So actually, the Prabhupada translation, Prabhupada keep it simple. Here also the Prabhupada translation and the dynamics coming up. Literal translation of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu would be what? The nectarian ocean of immortal devotion. Because there is obligation. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So Prabhupada nectar of devotion, translation simply. So now interestingly, as I was telling you earlier, that the Ishwaparishad was a series of talks or articles Prabhupada wrote in Act About It. So if you go back to Act About It, you will see this, and this sentence is not there in the song. Because at that time Prabhupada was not an NOD. So when actually devotee published it, so Prabhupada, there is only thing that this is available in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But then the devotee added in the sentence, so then actually we have translated the book in English as NOD, and you can read that book. So, and so editing is a very alive thing. You know, we have to be alive and alert of what is happening and then make sure that everything is done correctly. Prabhupada told the devotee that, told Jayabhi Maharaj, one mistake kills the book. One typing mistake, one proofreading mistake kills the book. I had one friend whose hobby was to read famous authors' books, find out mistakes in those books, and send the books to the authors. Whenever they were in America, England, they have all these mistakes in your books.
So that was his hobby. So then when I gave him Prabhupada's book, you know, he read and read, he couldn't find any mistake in Prabhupada's book for me. Just by reading to find mistakes, he has become a devotee. So I told Jayadvaita Maharaj about this, so he started laughing. He said, actually when they would do proofreading for every Bhagavata volume, they would have a sack full of proofreading. He asked him, you know, how many times should we proofread a book before 50? Maharaj, not more than 50 times. So we are not able to do that in voice, we barely did proofread once or twice. But they had very high standards, do a lot of hard work. It was a shastra, Prabhupada wanted to introduce the shastra. And at least on the material point of view, there should not be any mistake in shastra. Spiritually, there is no mistake. But materialistic people will see on the material vision. So it should be flawless. Thank you very much. Shisha Upanishad ki, Shila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktarind ki, Jai Gaur Prema.
Jai Krishna. We are not going to be late. Those students were very urgent.